This is Old Time Radio Drama. Welcome. I'm Norman Gilliland, and we have plenty to offer, so we'll get right to it, starting with the Challenge of the Yukon, in which we ask the question, why is Frisky the Pup so fat? And where is $50,000 in stolen gold? Well, you might think that the answer is in the title of our episode, The Pup That Ate Too Much. And maybe it is, but it's not quite that simple. In this broadcast from July 4th, 1946.
The Challenge of the Yukon.
On, King! On, you husky!
The Wonder Dog King, swiftest and strongest of Eskimo lead dogs, blazes the trail through storm and snow for Sergeant Preston as he meets the Challenge of the Yukon. Sergeant Preston was typical of the small band of Northwest Mounted Police who preserved law and order in the new Northwest country, where the greed for wealth and power led to frequent violence and bloodshed. But in spite of the odds against them, Sergeant Preston and his Wonder Dog King met that challenge, and justice ruled triumphant. Little Jane Cranston sat in the middle of the cabin floor, her black curls bobbing around her face as she bent over to pat her fat puppy. The pup was laboriously gulping down a piece of dried fish.
I guess maybe you've had enough to eat now, Frisky. Seems to be getting kind of hard for you to swallow. You sure can eat a lot. You must have been awful hungry. Here, you better drink some of this milk now and wash that fish down before it sticks in your throat.
Well, dear, did you get along all right alone?
Oh, yes, Mummy. Frisky and I played all morning. Hi, Daddy.
Great heavens, look at that pup. He swelled up like a balloon.
He does look awful fat. Guess that's because he ate so much.
Jane, you mustn't feed him like that. Puppies are little gluttons. They'll eat until they almost burst, and it isn't good for them.
Oh, well, he'll get skinny again. He swells up like that after all his meals.
So would you if you ate about four times as much as you should. After this, you better not feed him without asking Mummy or me first.
All right, Daddy. Oh, Frisky, now you're too tired to play. You just want to go to sleep.
Pete, that sounds like a dog team. Guess someone's coming.
Sergeant Preston and another Mountie. Hello, Sergeant.
Hi there, Pete.
Oh, is it Sergeant Preston? I want to see him.
Stay away from the door, Jane. It's cold. He's coming in.
How are you, Pete? Hello,
Mountie. Hello, Sergeant.
Oh, Sergeant, I'm so glad to see you. I've got something to show you.
Just a second. Molly and Jim, this is Corporal Bob Henry, Mr. and Mrs. Cranston.
How do you do?
Glad to know you, Corporal.
And here's my best girl, Jane.
How do you do?
Hello there.
You're a Mountie, too, just like Sergeant Preston.
Yes, except I'm a corporal and he's a sergeant.
Where's King, Sergeant Preston?
Well, I left him outside, dear. We can only stay a minute.
Oh, dear, can't you have dinner with us? I'll have it ready in a minute.
Well, thanks, Molly, but we can't stop.
It won't take her long, Preston.
Oh, but you have to stay. Look what I have. Oh, you've got to look at him. Wake up, Frisky.
Well, a pup. He's a beauty, Jane. Come here, little fella. Oh, my word, look at that stomach.
Jane overfed him while Jim and I were out this morning.
He's the most wonderful dog in the world, except maybe King. I want you to tell me just how to train him.
Well, the first thing I'd say, Jane, is don't give him all he wants to eat. Now, why don't you put your parka on and take him outside and introduce him to King?
All right. I'm sure they'll like each other. Come on, Frisky.
I'll hurry with dinner.
No, Molly, really, we can't stay. Corporal Henry and I are going north. We can't waste a minute.
I'll be back in a few minutes, Mummy.
All right, dear.
I wanted to get Jane outside before I told you why we stopped. I didn't want to frighten her.
Oh. What is it, Sergeant?
Corporal Henry and I are after a killer. We trailed him this far, and he's somewhere in this vicinity.
A killer? You mean
he robbed a bank in Dawson and killed two men. I wondered, Pete, whether you'd seen anything of him on the trail. He's a short, squat breed. Has an 8-dog team and a big sled heavily loaded with supplies.
No, I haven't seen anyone like that.
We lost his trail a few miles back, but I think we'll be able to pick it up again.
He's traveling with such a heavy load, we should be able to catch him.
How much gold did he steal from the bank?
$50,000 worth.
Oh.
You'd better keep Jane around the house for a while, Molly. You see, this man is ruthless and desperate. He knows we're after him. If Jane happened to see him, there's no telling what he'd do to prevent her telling about it.
I'll watch her carefully, Sergeant.
Well, Bob, we better get going. Sorry we can't stay longer, Molly. We'll stop by on the way back if everything goes all right.
Thanks for warning us about him, Sergeant. And good luck.
Thanks. Be careful.
Bye.
Goodbye. Stop in again as soon as you can.
Sergeant Preston, look. King and Frisky like each other.
Aww.
Frisky was so scared when he first saw King that he lay flat on his back and waved his feet in the air.
Well, he's a fine pup, Jane. I'll come back again and get better acquainted with him. Bye. You better take Frisky back into the house. All right, King. Up in front.
On, King! On, you huskies!
Goodbye.
Bye, Jane.
Oh, that's sure a nice family, isn't it? Why do they live way out here in the wilderness?
Well, Pete does a good business with his traps in winter and pans gold from the creek in summer. He'll soon have enough money to take his family back to civilization.
On, you huskies!
I think we better keep on this trail and see if we can pick up any sign of Pierce and his team farther on.
That last snowfall gave him a break, but it didn't last enough to hide his trail very long.
We'll find it if he kept going and isn't hiding somewhere.
Faster, King! On, you huskies!
It was noon of the following day when the Mounties picked up the trail of the man they were pursuing. Without stopping for the night, they continued on the trail that was lighted by bright moonlight. Dawn found them weary but plodding on doggedly, when suddenly they heard a shot.
Look for cover, Bob. Behind those rocks. Haw, King! Bring the dogs back, boy!
Oh, that was close. Case the shoulder of my partner.
Get down here beside me, Bob.
It's a good thing this light wasn't very good. He might have picked us off.
Down, Bob. Dogs are safe. King's taking them back. Looks like we'll have to shoot it out with Pierce.
Yeah, I've got a good spot here between these rocks. I hope I can get a bead on him. Just once.
King, you should have stayed with the team, boy. All right, lie down beside me, fella. There he is, Bob. Well, we're not going to get any place this way. If I could just get over to the left behind those trees and be able to shoot at him from different angles.
Well, you better not try it, Sergeant. It's too dangerous.
He might expose himself for a second to try and get me. I'm going to try it, Bob. Watch him. You stay here, King. Understand? Stay here.
Let me go, Sergeant.
Obey orders and stay where you are, Bob. Keep your eye on that rock where Pierce is hiding. Ready?
All ready. Good luck. Sergeant! Sergeant, I think I got him. He stood up to shoot at you and I saw him fall.
Might be a trick, Bob.
I'm sure I got him. I couldn't have missed him.
I guess you're right. He'd have shot at me again when I came back. You better be careful, though. You go to the right and I'll go to the left, around those rocks. That'll give one of us a chance in case you missed.
I didn't miss. I know I didn't. Here he is, Sergeant. Here in the snow. I got him right through the head.
Yes, you sure did, Bob. Well, that's the end of Pierce.
I'm sorry he's dead, but... Well, if I hadn't shot him, he might have killed you.
Well, that's all right, Bob. You had to do it. There's his team over near that clump of trees. Well, don't worry, King. I'm all right. Come on, Bob. We'll transfer the gold to my sled and put Pierce's body on his. Oh, that's funny.
What's wrong?
There's not a speck of gold on this sled.
What?
And there aren't many supplies on it either.
I'm sure that's Pierce. I'd know him anywhere.
Yes, it's Pierce, all right. But he knew we were after him and must have hidden that gold and a lot of supplies someplace. Probably thought he'd lighten his load enough to get away from us over the border and come back later and pick it up.
Yeah, he'd have made it, too, if we hadn't traveled all night. And now I've killed him. We'll never know where he's hidden it. What rotten luck.
Well, couldn't be helped. He's made a cache somewhere back on the trail. We'll search around here first and then go back slowly. We may have missed it during the night.
Hello, Sergeant Preston.
Hello, Mommy.
How are you, Corporal? I heard your dog team, but I was up to my elbows in soap suds. Why, you have two teams. Did you catch
him? Yes, we got him, Molly. We came back to tell you not to worry about Pierce anymore. He's dead.
Dead?
Oh. Yes, I shot him and killed him, and now we can't find the gold that he stole.
You mean he hid it somewhere?
Yes, and we haven't been able to find where he hid it. Guess we never will.
Well, at least you've rid the country of a murderer.
It's all my fault.
You had to do it, Bob. And you've probably saved my life by killing him. Where's Pete, Molly?
He's out looking for Frisky. The puppy's been gone for two days, and there's no sign of him anywhere.
Oh, Sergeant Preston, I'm so glad you came. You and King will find Frisky. I know you will.
Hello, Jane.
Jane, dear, Sergeant Preston can't waste time hunting for puppies. He's on duty.
But I love Frisky. He's the only thing that's all mine. If I don't find him, I'll just die, that's all.
Well, now, don't cry, dear. Of course we'll help you look for Frisky.
You will? Oh, Sergeant, I just knew you would.
Oh, really, Sergeant, it's too much to ask you to do this. Jane, well, you
can't. That's all right,
expect...
Molly. I'll be glad to help Jane.
Thank you, Sergeant Preston. You know just how I feel, because you love King so much.
That's right, Jane. Now, come on, we'll get King and see if we can find some trace of Frisky. You better help us, too, Bob.
Sergeant, don't you think we better be getting back to headquarters? It's important to...
Maybe this is important, too, Bob. Come on. When did you say Frisky disappeared, Jane?
2 days ago, after you were here. I'm so afraid he was caught in a trap or something. He ran away from me, and I couldn't go after him because Mummy made me promise not to go away from the house. I don't know why.
Well, there's your dad. Hi there, Pete.
Hello, Preston. Did you have any luck?
We got him all right. How about you? Any sign of Frisky?
Nope. I'm afraid we have to give up. I found some of his tracks in the snow over here a ways, but they stopped at a big strip of shale, and I couldn't follow them any farther. I'm afraid a wolf or something must have got him.
Oh, Daddy, no. Sergeant Preston.
Now, don't worry, Jane. We won't give up. Let's go back to those tracks, Pete. Perhaps King can help when we get to the shale where there's no snow.
Here's where the tracks end, Sergeant. He must have gone off among those rocks somewhere.
How could he get so far away? He was so little.
Well, those pups have more strength than you'd think, Jane. Here, King. These tracks, fellow. Find him. Find Frisky.
Why is he going around in a big circle?
Well, he's trying to pick up the scent, Jane. It's rather old. I wish we had something of Frisky's with his scent on it.
I brought his blanket with me. The one he slept on. I thought he might be cold if we found him.
Fine, Jane. Let me have it. Here, King. It's Frisky we're looking for. This blanket, fellow. Find him. That way, boy. Through those rocks.
Wind is blowing from that direction. That might help.
Come on. I'll try and follow King. He's the only one who can find Frisky.
Careful, Jane.
King found something, Sergeant. He's barking over at that big pile of rocks.
Yes, I see him. But I don't see Frisky.
Maybe it's just a rabbit or something.
King knew what he was looking for. What is it, boy?
Oh, I hope he's found my puppy.
He seems to be looking through that little hole between those rocks.
Alyssa!
It's Frisky. Frisky, is that you?
Now, let's move these rocks and get him out of there.
I don't see how he got in there. We're getting you out, Frisky.
Yeah, this one will do it.
There he is.
Oh, Frisky. Oh, I'm so glad to get you back.
Why, look at him. Look at how fat he is, that stomach.
After being caught in there for 2 days, wait a minute. Help me move some more of these rocks.
Sure.
That's enough. Yes, there's something in here. Oh, look at this.
Why, it's a bag of gold.
Preston, you think this is what...
I think we found Pierce's cash, Bob, thanks to Frisky.
But how did he get in there? And why didn't he come out the same way and come home?
Well, Jane, Frisky smelled of food hidden in here with the gold. He squeezed in that small opening, but after he'd eaten all he could, his stomach was too big and he couldn't get out. So he just lay down and went to sleep. When he woke up, he was hungry again. Went through the same routine.
He sure is a little glutton.
Yes. We found the gold. That's what's important.
Yes. Thanks to Frisky and King, the bank will get its money back.
And thanks to you, I've got Frisky. You and King were wonderful to look for him.
Well, we could hardly do less for our best girl, could we, King?
These copyrighted dramas originate in the studios of WXYZ Detroit, and all characters, names, places, and incidents used are fictitious. They are sent to you each week at the same time. Hugh Holder speaking. This is the Michigan Radio Network.
The Challenge of the Yukon, back in its quarter-hour days, that was The Pup That Ate Too Much, from July 4th, 1946. And indeed, he did eat too much. It didn't have a lot to do with gold, though, except that that's where the gold was hidden, where the pup was to be found. We'll be hearing from Will Rogers now. Will Rogers, a great American original who made his fame first on the vaudeville circuit as a rope twirler and as a joke cracker, and then became almost a humorist statesman, diplomat on behalf of the United States, and we'll sample him in those roles in different speeches. Taken from the early 1930s, and you'll find that in many instances they have something to say about today. We'll begin with what's called his unemployment speech. It comes from October 18, 1931, and features one of his most famous utterances about 7 million unemployed and the United States having the distinction of being the only nation that went to the poorhouse in an automobile. Will Rogers.
Now, don't get scared and stuff your radios. I'm not advertising or trying to sell you anything. Now, Mr. Owen Young asked me to annoy on this program this evening. You all know Mr. Owen D. Young, you know. He's the only sole surviving wealthy Democrat. Well, Mr. Young, he's head of the Young Plan, you know. He's the originator of the Young Financial European Plan. He's the head of Young Men's Temperance Union and originator of Young's Markets and Young Kipper. And they was the first Democratic child born of white parents in Youngstown, Ohio. He started the Young Plan in Europe. That was that every nation pay just according to what they could afford to pay, see? And, well, somebody else come along with an older plan than Young's plan, and it was that nobody don't pay anybody anything. And, of course, that's the oldest plan there is. And that's the one they're working under now. That's why we ain't getting anything from Europe. We're reading the papers every day, and they get us all excited over to one or a dozen different problems that's supposed to be before this country. There's not really but one problem before the whole country at this time. It's not the balancing of Mr. Mellon's budget. That's his worry. That ain't ours. And it's not the League of Nations that we read so much about, or it's not the silver question. The only problem that confronts this country today is that at least 7 million people are out of work. That's our only problem. There is no other one before us at all. It's to see that every man that wants to, able to work, is allowed to find a place to go to work. Prohibition, we hear a lot about that. Well, that's nothing to compare to your neighbor's children that are hungry. It's food. It ain't drink that we're worried about today. Here a few years ago, we were so afraid that the poor people were liable to take a drink that now we've fixed so they can't even get something to eat. So here we are in a country with more wheat and more corn and more money in the bank, more cotton, more everything in the world. There's not a product that you can name that we haven't got more of it than any country ever had in the face of the earth. And yet we've got people starving. We'll hold the distinction of being the only nation in the history of the world that ever went to the poorhouse in an automobile. The potter's field are lined with granaries full of grain. Now, if there ain't something cockeyed in an arrangement like that, then this microphone here in front of me is, well, it's a cuspidor, that's all. I don't suppose there's the and most unemployed of the hungriest man in America has contributed in some way to the wealth of every millionaire in America. It wasn't the working class that brought this condition on at all. It was the big boys themselves who thought that this financial drunk we were going through was going to last forever. They overmerged and overcapitalized and over everything else. That's the fix that we're in now. Now, I think that every town and every city will raise this money. In fact, they can't afford not to. They've got the money because there's as much money in the country as there ever was. Only the fewer people have it, but it's there. And I think the towns will all raise it because I've been on a good many charity affairs all over the country, and I have yet to see a town or a city ever fail to raise the money when they knew the need was there and they saw the necessity. Every one of them will come through. Europe don't like us, and they think we're arrogant and bad manners and have a million faults, but every one of them, they give us credit for being liberal. Doggone it, our people are liberal. I don't know about America being fundamentally sound and all that after-dinner hooey, but I do know that America is fundamentally liberal.
Blaming mergers and overcapitalization. That was Will Rogers talking about unemployment on October 18th, 1931. And he may have said that all he knew was in the newspapers, but if so, he certainly did a lot of reading. Well, 1932 was the big year for the Democrats, and their convention took place on June 27th through July 2nd, 1932, in Chicago. Will Rogers spoke on that occasion and urged support of the Democratic candidate that would be Franklin Delano Roosevelt, ultimately. And he also urges party unity, some messages that would be relevant to many a presidential political convention. And again, from the speakings, you might say, the extemporizations of Will Rogers.
Do me a favor, Forquist. When you leave, now some of you are going to be disappointed. Some of you come here for your candidate, and your heart and soul is set on your candidate. Now, for God's sake, do this thing for us, will you? When, no matter who they nominate, somebody, a lot of you are going to be disappointed. But for the Lord's sake, for once in your life, go home. Don't act like Democrats. Act like he was the man you come here to see nominated. Dadgummit, get out of there. By golly, you'll be there. Anyone. Don't go home sore and say we nominated the weakest man and we can't win with him. You don't know whether he'll be the weakest man. The man you think will be the weakest man, if they nominate him, you don't know it till next November. Boy, they couldn't. I don't see how they could possibly be a weak enough man not to win in November. I don't know how he could be so weak. God, if he lives till next November, he's in, that's all. So just get some cards. And now, I'm going to leave you all, and I know comedy is no novelty on this rostrum. It's a shame. It's a terrible thing for a comedian to get up here and have to follow what I have. But I will say that this is the only intentional comedy that's been here. You know what I mean? I mean, mine is meant to be foolish. But listen, do go home now. I don't know. Now, everybody makes fun of us with our convention. Say, look at them fool Democrats. Get there and act a fool. They'll be there for a month and fight and argue. Now, the people don't know. They don't know it. You know why we have so much fun at our conventions, you know? Because heretofore, we've always had fun at our conventions because we knew we wasn't going anywhere else. You know what I mean? That was the last... Now, but listen, I showed up, folks. Please do this. Please do this. When they nominate, when they bring in the platform, don't argue too much over it, because they ain't going to live by it nohow. You know what I mean? Nobody's going to live by it. It ain't going to ever be read anymore. Don't take it serious. I mean, it's just for the orator to get up and point to and all. So don't mess with the platform. When it comes to your candidates, do the best you can for them. Stay with them as long as you can rightfully do so. But when they nominate the other fella, dadgum you, if you'll get together and go home and quit messing around with, you know, and fighting among yourselves, you got a good chance. Now do that, will you? Goodbye and good luck to you.
From the summer of 1932, Will Rogers addressing the Democratic Convention, the one that eventually nominated Franklin Delano Roosevelt and made it stick. Next, A Tooth for Paul Revere. It's an episode of Escape. In just a moment, you're listening to Old Time Radio Drama on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.